Welcome to the Butts and Seats Podcast, episode number 114.
And what a doozy it is.
I'm Nick alongside Emily.
Hello.
How you doing tonight, Emily?
I'm good. I'm tired. I'm gearing up for a big weekend. I put on my press-on nails in the office today.
Wow.
So very good at pro, what am I trying to say?
Multitasking.
That's the word. Very good at multitasking.
You were going to say procrastinating is what you were going for.
Let me say something.
No. You made your bed. You have to lie in it.
Very good at multitasking today.
Emily, what is it we do here on this program besides look at Otto?
Mostly we just look at Otto and say he's so cute because he is just so cute. But usually
he's eyeballing me.
We take a week by week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s.
I said last week we were eating our vegetables.
We were.
This week we're in a little bit of a Vince Russo reprieve.
We're skipping straight from vegetables to dessert.
Yeah.
We don't need the main course yet.
And there are bits of this, no pun intended, that are too sweet.
Too sweet!
But today we're talking about the June 19th, 2000 Monday Nitro.
Booyaka!
A.K.A. Rey Mysterio Nitro, which he does wrestle on.
He
I was concerned
on.
For him. Also, yes. It is Juneteenth, but
it's
2000,
day.
So
yeah,
no
they
one...
don't recognize Juneteenth yet.
So tonight's Nitro takes place in a new location for the first time, which is kind of funny based on the movie Ready to Rumble.
Did Ready to Rumble take place in Billings?
It took place in Cheyenne, but like notably, they never went to Montana before this.
Oh.
And notably, Eric Bischoff is not here, even though he kind of lives in Montana, kind of lives in Minnesota. Who the fuck knows at this point?
All the M states, they're just so close to each other, too. That
they're
it's
not.
Like,
eh. They're not close.
Montana and Minnesota are.
Though they... If you actually break down the mileage, they are very far.
They share a border, don't they?
No. The Dakotas are definitely in between. There might be even more states.
Missouri is in that same
little...
No,
Missouri
yes, it
south.
Is.
Missouri's like next to Oklahoma.
No, it is not.
Missouri is by like Kansas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's north of Kansas.
Well, I mean, maybe a little bit, but it's mainly east of Kansas.
This the is American not a geography lesson. The American public school system has failed us.
Like, you can... No, it failed you?
Us. I don't think I'm wrong.
Which one? You're wrong.
All of the
all
above.
Of them.
I think all the M's are pretty close to each other geographically.
Emily.
We're not doing this.
Michigan and Minnesota are next to each other.
Montana's close by, too.
They're both the Dakotas
they
are in between.
They share a border.
No,
yes, they
don't.
No.
Emily, I'm literally looking at a map.
Show me.
You have...
No, we're stopping the podcast.
They say it's the show me state, which is Missouri.
I still think I'm right. I'm not going to waste our time and look up a map. I'm just going to stay right. Move on.
Jesus Christ. I don't know where Billings is either in terms of... Montana is a wide state.
It's a big state.
That said, the crowd for this is hot.
They are. They're really hype.
It's hype like people who don't get wrestling shows all that often.
Has WWE ever really gone there?
I mean, it's not one of their hotbeds. I mean, it's Montana. No offense, but it's Montana.
It's a beautiful state.
I don't have the attendance for this, but considering it was a hot crowd, I didn't feel the need to super note it and like potentially bury them.
Yeah, I mean, they were really vocal.
Because why bury them with attendance when I can bury them with ratings? This show is down. It did a 2.7 from last week's above a 3. I forget exactly what. Raw was also down. It did a 5.8. This was game 6 of the NBA Finals in which the Lakers won, so...
Okay.
That would have taken a lot of the attention. However, there are only 3 more Nitros where they do above a 3, and at least 2 of them are either entirely unopposed or mostly unopposed.
Mm.
I don't know about the third one, because it's the third week in that series, and the U.S. Open would have just ended. So, watch out for the September 11th episode.
Watch out! It's kind of sad that this didn't quite hit a 3, though, because this was a good show. And I think if last episode was not so take your lumps, this would have done better.
Yes, because as previously mentioned, the reason why this was a very different feeling show and the reason why we had a different intro song is that Vince Russo is not here this week.
Woo! And neither is a lot of people.
Yeah, Vince Russo kind of quit over the weekend. The reason varies depending on who you're asking. Because there is an element of Eric Bischoff wants to bring Miss Elizabeth, Lex Luger, and Kimberly back. Russo does not want to do that. Russo got also very upset at Turner Standards and Practices because there was a segment on Thunder that 2 lines were cut out of because Kevin Nash referenced the movie Deliverance.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the, you sure do got a purty mouth, don't you?
They cut like, that?
Yeah, because it's not a great vibe.
It's not G, however, but it's not like R.
Well, no, it's the context of the scene. Yeah. However, Turner does air the movie Deliverance on its networks.
Hmm.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, standards practice is hampering me.
Listen.
If you ask WCW, he has a concussion and he's recovering.
Yeah, they quickly wrote off why Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff were not there.
So that does beg the question of who is running the show in their stead, because Eric Bischoff just randomly not here.
Yes.
Very much like, oh, I'm taking a vacation.
What was the reasoning they gave in the episode?
He's dealing with business. Very Vincent adult man reasons.
Yes, I have a business meeting.
He's at Hogan's New York meeting in TNA in 2010.
Sure.
So in the meantime, Ed Ferreira, who was Russo's original writing partner.
And Oklahoma.
Yes. And Terry Taylor are writing the show.
The man with glasses?
That's J.J. Dillon.
God damn.
I think Terry Taylor also had glasses, but the segment you're referring to is J.J. Dillon.
J.J. Dillon. Damn it.
Well, notably, Terry Taylor was formerly the Red Rooster, a gimmick which killed his career that may or may not come up later in this show.
Oh, God.
Other backstage news, notable terrible human being, Johnny Ace has started working for WCW backstage.
Who is Johnny Ace?
John Laurinaitis. At some point over the weekend, Chris Candido has a broken wrist. We will see him in action later.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a cast in a sling, but he's still in the ring.
We may have previously mentioned this. Jimmy Hart is currently off TV because he has torn knee ligaments from his match with Mankow.
I don't know that you told me they were torn knee ligaments.
Yeah.
Jeez. Mankow.
That's not how you say ligaments.
Move past it.
In some formal housekeeping, because we have definitely talked about we don't see these guys again. La Parca, Psychosis, Silver King, El Dandy, Lodi, The Barbarian, and Los Villanos were all released by WCW.
Lodi, too. He's the one that I don't think I realized.
They haven't appeared in a while. No. I thought they were released even earlier, so.
I thought we would have mentioned it earlier.
We did. I don't remember. Lenny asked for his release, and Lodi's like, what the fuck?
I don't remember this.
So, yeah, we've said goodbye to all these guys, but they are officially gone as of now. Notably, WCW is still in the middle of a racial discrimination lawsuit, and I just mentioned five different Hispanic wrestlers.
All people of color, at the very least.
Lodi's not.
Well, of the five.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know if they're all Hispanic, but they're all people of color.
Yeah, and the Barbarian is some sort of Polynesian, I want to say. In fun news, Billy Kidman and Tori Wilson were not on this Nitro because they were busy moving in together.
Aww.
Despite the fact that they just broke up on TV.
How cute.
Speaking of Tori Wilson, she is expected to return as Hulk Hogan's valet.
I thought you were about to say she is expecting.
Oh, no. No, expected to be Hulk Hogan's manager.
Sure.
This does not happen.
Oh.
I was mentioning this last week. Kimberly has quit after Steiner called her a cunt behind her back. And then they got into a whole argument and she went, fuck this, I'm leaving.
I feel like that had to just be the straw that broke the camel's back. That can't have been the be-all, end-all reason.
Yeah, apparently
I imagine
she
that
was
word
getting
is
a Sable vibe backstage.
I imagine that word is not rare backstage, unfortunately.
No, yeah, this seemed to be like a long festering thing.
Mm.
In the office, WCW, like, regular employees are currently trying to get transferred to other Turner properties because they're like, this is going downhill.
They can literally feel the ship sinking.
Yes.
Damn.
Rey Mysterio is only about 70% right now.
But he will be in the ring wrestling.
Conan is going to get surgery. He's going to be out for 3 to 6 months.
Jesus.
And in ECW, Paul Heyman held a talent meeting basically to see if anybody was going to bitch at him about money. And then he proceeded to pay everybody. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Just in time for the network to, like, acquire WWF and cancel ECW.
Hey, at least everybody got paid.
So that's it for the backstage notes. But considering it's becoming more and more important, I think it's time for a weather report. Because it's time to talk about thunder.
Let's go.
Yeah, so forgive the stuff we mentioned last episode for this. Because I'm going to run through some things that happened on Thunder, because a lot happened. Nash chased Russo all night and kidnapped Jeff Jarrett, which this storyline basically turns into like a slasher movie kind of vibe.
It does.
Yeah, Russo's like hopping over cars. Nash is hiding behind like the smallest of bushes.
He pops up in every single segment. Kevin Nash, not Vince Russo.
Shane Douglas, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Chris Candido united to form the Triple Threat. Shane Douglas claims he has the copyrights for this. I don't think it's ever going to matter.
Fair.
Well, more on that later.
A triple threat, Michael.
The Mamalukes explode. More on this later. Tank Abbott and Rick Steiner pre-recorded a clip of them arriving at the arena to air in the dressing room of the Perfect Event. So the Perfect Event would make fun of them, and then Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott attacked them from behind and went, "Oh, it was pre-recorded, you dumb fucks."
Yep, that is correct.
Just really process the steps that we require there.
A lot of logistics for what payoff?
I mean, I had the same thought on the knocking on the door, sliding the note, 419, got a minute.
See, that was at least funny.
So the match with Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott ends in a no contest after Rick Steiner Steinerlines Tank Abbott by mistake, and they're like, "Wait, we got to throw this out." So Scott Steiner then saves his brother from a Perfect Event beatdown, so it's a very weird whose side is he on.
Mm-hmm.
Kidman says he's no longer New Blood. For some reason, that gets him a world title shot.
Sure.
The Filthy Animals turn on him and beat him down post-match. Both of us were actually kind of excited about that because that means we might get Kidman versus Ray.
We might get Kidman Ray again.
Vampiro gets blood spit in his face by Asia in the crowd, so he hits his nail in the coffin on her and then gets thrown into the demon's sarcophagus and then like casually just like pushes it open. But he's woozy. I don't know what he's selling. It's weird.
I don't know.
More on them later. A lot more.
So much more on Dale Torborg later.
Daphne and David Flair seemingly break up. Daphne knows that he's been hanging around Miss Peacock. And she brawls with Miss Hancock. And there's a lot of cuts in here because apparently Daphne's boobs kept falling out of whatever shirt she was wearing. It is pre-taped, so you perverts don't have anything.
Yeah, there's just a lot of cuts to the crowd and just like random guys' faces during the match.
Crowbar tries to come to the rescue, but is taken out by David. They have a match, and he shaves like the already shaved part of Crowbar's hair.
Yeah, it was another freaking hair match, and David kind of just like gave him a trim.
Important to know for tonight, Ernest the Cat Miller, who is now the commissioner, and I think may have been before, but now is like the only on-screen authority figure, he bans the Steiner recliner during that show.
Very important.
Yes. So important that commentary forgets about it for a while. Despite mentioning it.
Honestly, seeing, like, going back to Crowbar, I'm kind of sad that he was on Thunder and he was not anywhere on this show.
I feel like he'll turn up eventually.
I hope so, because I love him. And I think that he and Daphne should get together and team up against David.
Kevin Nash tries to call Scott Hall in a backstage segment. Hall was supposed to answer, but Shoot didn't answer the phone, so Kevin Nash had to improv.
I mean, it worked. I wouldn't have noticed if you didn't tell me.
Russo threatens to rip up Scott Hall's contract, and Nash gets beat down after being blindsided.
Why does Kevin Nash keep going to bat for Scott Hall? That is the only storyline this man has.
Yeah.
In WCW, in TNA, we're watching the exact same storyline 20 years apart. Not even 20, 10 years apart.
Here's the difference. Scott Hall will continue to appear on TNA. Scott Hall will not appear on WCW ever again.
Yeah. So what's the point?
I don't even know if he shows up in ECW. I think he's supposed to at one point. But I'm like, I don't know if he actually turns up or if he no-shows.
Both are possible.
So yeah, that's a longer intro than usual.
Had a lot to cover. I mean, that Thunder was like, we were watching it just for fun. And we're like, oh, this is important.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here. We need to talk about this.
But let's get into the actual Nitro from Billings, Montana, right next to Minnesota, apparently.
I stand by.
You have multiple devices. No. We're up in the Northeast in Montana.
it's like down the street, right?
Yeah, I, you know what? Yeah, it's just south of Richmond because they drove from Baltimore to Richmond.
Yep.
It's actually in between. If you make a right at Fredericksburg, you get to Montana.
Oh, I never go to Fredericksburg. That's where traffic was born.
So, on the Nitro, two limos pull up for some reason. It's the Cat in one, and then it's Mike Awesome and Jeff Jarrett in the other one. Remember Jeff Jarrett, the world champion?
Who?
They quickly note that Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff are not here.
Yeah, they write it off in one sentence.
I mean, I think you kind of have to. You can't just go, who?
Yeah.
You can't CM Punk him. But yeah, so the Cat is the commissioner, and he's told by this one prominent security member, he gets multiple speaking lines tonight, that there's a problem in the ring. And what's the problem, Emily?
Horace Hogan is CM Punking.
Is he?
He's sitting in the middle of the ring with a microphone, just like ready to go off. So, well, I call that CM Punking.
He's sitting in a chair with a baseball bat.
No, he had a microphone, I thought. He spoke.
Well, oh, yeah, he grabs it after.
So he wasn't sitting on the floor, but he was sitting in the middle of the ring.
We didn't get the Nitro graphic and the opening pyro going off with Horace Hogan just chilling in the ring. Like the quarter pyro goes off. It's just like...
He doesn't even flinch. I would have been like...
But to me, it's just like, we're not fussed about Horace Hogan. We can just work around him.
He's fine. Just leave him there.
We get Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Scott Hudson all in, like, kind of matching suits on commentary.
Yeah, you thought this was intentional.
I think it was just someone is actually giving them, hey, let's look nice and proper.
Maybe.
I think the fact that they're all actually matching is random, but I think the fact that they're all in suit and, like, professional is a concentrated point.
Maybe.
So post-pyro, Horace Hogan has a mic, starts cutting a promo. He says Goldberg is fly by night and calls him out for attacking Hulk Hogan. He wants revenge on Goldberg and wants to be next.
Also notably during this, I think this might have been before he even starts his promo, Mark Madden on commentary gives Horace Hogan a little bit of shit, saying, typical Hogan looking for extra airtime.
On a Hulk Hogan note, I don't have any backstage notes for him, but at my new job, I work with somebody who used to work for the WWF. And can confirm, Hulk Hogan, shoot asshole.
Shocking. I know. And breaking news.
And apparently everyone knew that Hogan ratted Jesse Ventura out for unionizing before Jesse knew. Oh. Hear more about Jesse Ventura over on our Patreon.
Woo!
Coming soon, the Jesse Ventura story.
Get absolutely hype.
You want to see Jesse Ventura beat Goldberg in the 70s? Boy, do I have the movie for you.
I'm sorry, documentary.
So the guy comes out to the ramp as we see replays from Thunder of him banning the Steiner recliner, which they note, and the cat just starts cutting his promo over the clips.
Yeah, he like doesn't really seem to have a grasp of what's happening.
Like, he's not wearing an earpiece.
Well, yeah, I guess that must be it, because cat is talking while commentary is talking while a video is playing, so everything is happening all simultaneously. And, like, no one's... I mean, isn't that also kind of what a referee is for in the ring? To be like, hey, here's what's fucking happening.
Well, during
like
a match.
But I feel like that could stretch to during segments, too.
Yeah,
it should.
Not, yeah. There was no reason to go to a replay there. That's really on them for that.
I mean, there still should have been somebody to communicate.
A guy
that
is
with.
Making his entrance with a microphone. Don't do a fucking replay.
There should have been somebody there to communicate that with Ernest Miller.
So the cat says him and Goldberg are too busy for Horace. And also, Goldberg would kill you, so... No.
Like, he literally does say that. He's like, you will die.
The cat then says, since Russo isn't here, well, sorry, I filled in the blanks on that, but there will be no outside interference. It is banned for this show.
Across the board.
Yes. He did not say because Russo's not here, but that's...
In every match, no outside interference. And if you do interfere, you will be fined and you will be suspended for 30 days.
Emily, would it shock you to learn that Vince Russo apparently thought there was too much wrestling on this show?
That's fucking ridiculous.
But does it shock you?
Nothing should shock me anymore.
But yeah, there's a 30-day suspension. There was also like a, when you're back, you're going to work in my dojo cleaning toilets or whatever for the rest of your contract.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
No.
There's limited outside interference, and they kind of just ignore or explain away the ones that actually do happen.
Yeah, but notably not zero.
So the guy, for some reason, notes that he has Scott Hall's contract. Wouldn't have said that, because that brings out Kevin Nash, Scott Steiner, and Medasia. No more Shakira.
Boo.
Yeah?
I don't care. I had to ask you which one it was coming down the ramp.
You don't remember our touching Shakira farewell last episode?
We didn't have a Shakira farewell.
Yes, we did.
I listened to the episode. No, we did not.
I noted that she was done.
That's not a farewell.
I mean, Nash says they're in a real bad mood, and then they basically bully the cat into booking Horace versus Goldberg. Steiner then says he snapped Russo's neck on Thunder, and he's been looking for Eric Bischoff, but can't find him.
Yeah, so keep looking.
Steiner wants him versus the cat. The cat declines, but gives Scott Steiner Jeff Jarrett instead for the world title.
Which Jarrett is, you know, mad about, rightfully.
You know, the world champion.
That man is so unnecessary to any storyline. He's just a placeholder.
Is the belt in worse shape than when David Arquette had it?
Yes. Because there is more, there was more story around David Arquette having it, and like more.
He was a focus.
There was more discourse about like who should have the belt. This is just cat and mouse keep away. I don't know.
I know that wasn't a pun, but you managed to turn it into one.
Did I?
The cat.
Oh, did not mean to do that.
So Nash says they're not done yet, and he wants Scott Hall's contract, and he challenges the Cat for it.
Why?
And then the Cat agrees under duress, and Nash says he's been doing great as commissioner, which is good, because Nash is going to, like, break his back.
Sure.
The Cat then bails through the crowd, which, one, why didn't you do before? But then, two, is, like, mildly attacked by a fan who may have been a plant. Nobody knows.
I was
going to
ask you about this, because we follow the Cat going into the crowd, and the camera very quickly cuts away when the Cat starts to get into it with an audience member. And we never go back to the Cat.
To my knowledge, this never comes back up, so. Yeah, it's weird of, like, it may be a plant, but it doesn't ever affect anything.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of things that don't affect anything, Christopher Daniels, a.k.a. God or Lord or whatever, not here tonight.
Okay.
Remember the Howard Power?
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, that's done. That's kind of the theme of tonight of, remember that thing? Yeah,
it's done.
Cut that.
We're rewriting things. We're restarting the story.
So we have three matches for later. That's, you know, not bad.
It's more than usual.
And three matches that, like, have some story or stakes to them. So, yeah, it's all then. Commentary checks into camera. The main note here is Hulk Hogan versus Jeff Jarrett will still happen at Bash at the Beach, assuming Hogan can even make it there.
Ugh.
The Perfect Event then go into a production truck to do the same thing that Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott did, but for some reason we cut to this, and then we cut to Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott watching from outside the truck, and they're like, ah, it's live, dummy, and beat him down.
Sure. I wasn't totally following this one.
Yeah, it's stupid. Jeff Jarrett then storms into the Cat's office and is pissed off about having to defend his title before defending it at the pay-per-view.
Rightfully so.
So the Cat makes Mike Awesome the special guest referee.
So I have a thought. You said Jarrett Hogan is still on for Bash at the Beach.
Yeah.
What would have happened if kayfabe Jarrett loses tonight?
That's always a problem with these.
So they're confirming that there is still going to be a match for a title, but they're putting the title on the line, so that makes the match entirely unimportant.
Well, technically, Hogan doesn't have a shot at Bash at the Beach. Per Hogan, he has a shot at the July pay-per-view.
Oh,
so
whatever.
If they just have another July pay-per-view, then we're good. If we pull an AEW and do pay-per-views in back-to-back weekends,
oh God,
we're good.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's what they're doing right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Oh, but also, what was the last title match we had that didn't have a special guest referee?
Nick, I don't fucking know. Everything is a title match.
So this special referee is good enough for Jarrett. And then a member of R&B Security, same one as before, reminds the Cat, like, hey, crowd's just kind of waiting for a fucking match to go on. Can you book the show?
Good point, again.
And he's like, okay, give me those Spice Girls or Backstreet Boys or whatever. It's like, three count? Yeah, them. Get them out there.
He really leans on Spice Girls in that, so he's trying to call them. He is trying to call them girls.
And because 2000, by extension, gay.
Yes.
Apparently it's gay to be a girl. Who knew?
It is. It's true. All girls are gay.
So, per Peacock, we get three count already in the ring about to do their dance. And they are attacked from behind by the Young Dragons.
So we got a hell of a match to start off our show.
So do you remember the actual members of these two groups?
I know Three Count, and I know Jamie-san.
Okay, so Three Count is?
Three Count is Shane Helms, Evan Courageous, and Dilly Gaff Shannon Moore.
I was going to say, you have to call him Shannon Moore. I will not accept Dilly Gaff.
Sorry, it's the Hurricane, it's Dilly Gaff, and Evan Courageous.
And then Young Dragons, Jamie-san, Jamie Noble.
That's the only name I
remember. Kaz Hayashi is the other one that I know you know. And then, God, he looks different. Yang is the third one. It goes on to become the Asian cowboy, Jimmy Wang Yang in WWE.
And Nick, I don't know if you know this, but Jimmy Wang Yang, spelled backwards, is actually killer.
Save it for Johnny the Bull, please. Don't disrespect Johnny the Bull like that. So in case you were doubtful that this is going to be, if this is going to be a good or bad match, almost immediately they hit high-flying offense, including a double moonsault to the floor. This match goes maybe 4 minutes and
I could have watched it for hours.
Yeah, this match is worked like guys that go, we have one shot, let's fucking go out there and make them, like, this is literally the definition of maximizing your minutes and then some.
This is what Eminem was singing about when he said, you only get one shot, not miss your chance to blow this opportunity comes once in a lifetime, yo.
Kaz Hayashi gets hit with a double team neckbreaker and then a missile dropkick Russian leg sweep combo. Helms goes for his diving sunset flip and then hits a gut wrench suplex. And we actually get three count sucks chants. I think that's when we're like, oh, this crowd is hot.
Yeah, this crowd was on tonight.
Three count double team Kaz. it's so weird writing Kaz in my notes now that we're reviewing Kazarian matches.
Right. Very different Kazes, though.
Yes. To be fair, you did think Kaz Hayashi was cute, too, so.
Did I back the day?
Yeah.
Ugh, but Kazarian, though.
So, yeah, three count double team Kaz, and Kaz fights off Courageous and more, and makes the hot tag to Yang. Yang fights off all three men, but is hit with a sleeper slam by Moore. Courageous hits a very sloppy corkscrew splash. Really needs to get rid of that one.
Yeah, but, you know.
Like, it might work if it was, like, to a standing opponent, but just, like, the falling makes it look like, oh, yeah, I meant to do that.
I don't know. I thought it looked cool. I thought it looked, like, purposefully messy.
Well, speaking of that, he goes
it's
for the...
It's kind of Hardy-esque. That's what I'm thinking. It was kind of Jeff Hardy-esque.
And I don't say that as a compliment.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I would say, speaking of messy, Courageous goes for the pin, and Kaz Hayashi breaks it up by punting him in the face.
Yes.
And either great execution in selling, or you kick that man in the face, because I was like, oh, fuck!
Made a good noise, too, and I don't think that was just him slapping his hand on his thigh.
Moore stops a double dive from the dragons by crotching them, and then Jamie-san eats a clothesline. Three count hits a three-man assisted facebuster, which I assume will eventually get a name. And they get the win.
Woo!
This was a very good match.
I love
this. To be expected.
I mean, we say that like this never could have been bad, but like we've seen matches like this get screwed up. So this was really fun to watch. I could have watched this for another half an hour.
Admittedly, special mention of the two teams to three count. I had to rewatch this match because I didn't take great notes the first time. And upon rewatching it, I'm like, oh, this is mostly three count doing stuff and keeping the energy up. As the heels, which is kind of funny.
This is one of those matches that I did not have the heel face dynamic down. I was just watching a fun match.
Yeah.
You could have said that for Emily. They're foreign. They're from Japan.
Oh, fuck.
Like, come on.
One of them's not.
He's intended to be.
Three count, I feel like, carried the load a little bit here. Like, Young Dragons can go, but it definitely felt like this was three counts match.
This was just really good energy across the board. I want more of this all the time, always.
And to add to the energy, three count go to celebrate, and all of a sudden, one of them is hit by a springboard dropkick from a Mr. Lance Storm.
The Popeye popped.
We were like, the thing is, I like kind of knew in the back of my brain, yeah, Lance Storm turns up soon. I just, like, forgot. I went, oh, what the fuck?
I remember you making some joke. I don't know if it was on the podcast or just to me. Because you've been talking about, like, yeah, Lance Storm was in WCW. And you made some sort of joke because we've talked about, like, AJ Styles is going to be on for one episode. Or, like, we're going to catch this guy in one match. I think you made a similar joke like that about Lance Storm.
I don't think I did because I remember noting Lance Storm becomes commissioner at one point.
I think you might have mentioned that he was, like, on Thunder and we'll maybe see him once. Like, you were making some sort of, like, deprecating joke to our show of, like, we don't get anything good. But alas,
might
be serious for a second.
He's here. He attacks three count, hits a big dive out of the ring onto them and bails back through the crowd. As commentary, he's like, what? He doesn't work here.
Who is this man?
Unless you checked WCW.com where they announced previously, we've signed Lance Storm.
That'll give it away.
You're booking for internet fans at this point. It's like, okay, not the best look here.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Landstorm. I'm almost disappointed his debut is attacking three count because I want him to like attack like a Booker T or, you know, somebody higher up the card.
It's bizarre that in the year 2000, Twitter is still ruining wrestling. Or affecting wrestling. Not Twitter, you know, but the internet as a whole.
Yeah.
Some things really, truly never change.
Backstage, David Flair looks for Daphne. I will mention that there's no mention of Ric Flair tonight at all.
No, not at all.
Who? He's getting the Jeff Jarrett treatment.
Not as bad.
Yeah, is it worse to not be mentioned or to be actively buried?
That one.
Oh, elsewhere, Goldberg arrives.
Everybody is way more timely tonight, so we'll give him that.
Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair aren't here, so.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Mike Tenay asks Horace Hogan if he's fucking stupid, more or less.
Yeah, like, he really does.
Why are you challenging Goldberg? What the fuck?
Tenay really does just go up and say, what the hell were you thinking?
And Horace is like, I might be crazy, but I'm fired up and not. I take a bullet for Hulk Hogan, but tonight I'm firing the bullets. And
he clearly does take the bullet because look at the scar on his forehead. Did you see that?
He fucks up a lot of his verbiage in this promo too.
Did you see that though? Like, it was so prominent. Like, I've never seen it before when he's wrestling, but in that promo, I was like, holy shit, you bleed a lot.
We'll get Horace's match later, but now it's time for the Mamalukes Explode.
Yeah?
It's Vito versus Johnny the Bull.
I don't think of this as exploding.
I'm going for WrestleMania 5 thing.
Okay.
You'd know if you watched it.
I'm busy!
What are you doing from 6:30 to 7:30?
Sleeping, mostly.
No, you're not. Otto's getting you up every morning. We see clips from Thunder of the actual turn, including a Python plant from the apron through a table at ringside. Vito canes Johnny the Bull to start, and they go up the ramp. They go offstage right and just kind of generally brawl. A lot of this match is just Vito kicking the crap out of Johnny the Bull.
Yeah, Johnny the Bull does not get offense for like 85% of this match.
Yeah, he's really lacking that killer instinct.
What do you mean?
Vito kicks the relic of a safety barricade.
Fuck you.
Into Johnny the Bull as they brawl to the back. Vito hits Johnny with a trash can and just kind of throws him into tables backstage and then into a pile of chairs. Vito throws Johnny the Bull through drywall, but is pushed into some pipe and drape pipes. Which, like, oh, those steel pipes.
They are hollow and light. I, a small woman, can carry like 10 of them at once.
What? Why did you turn into the guy from Heroes of Wrestling of, I did not come to Biloxi, Mississippi. The hero of the wrestling.
The voice that came into my soul.
Slightly haunted?
Yeah.
So the two then brawl over to the scaffolding. There are three layers to the scaffolding. They go up to the first one.
Why is there scaffolding?
Who the fuck? They're in an arena. I don't know.
It's just like randomly backstage.
Yeah.
Set up.
Vito hits a Python plant off the first level through the table for the win. This was not as fun as last week. This wasn't bad, but...
It wasn't bad.
It just, yeah. Johnny the Bull didn't do anything for most of this.
No, he didn't. I mean, it was still fine. Like, this was not a bad match by any stretch of the imagination. Especially from what we're coming off of. But it wasn't as fun.
I need to start this by saying there's not a relic joke at the end of this bit.
Really?
I'm actually kind of worried for Johnny the Bull. I don't think he's that good.
Do you think he has a killer instinct?
The fact that you're like now putting him as a singles act, like no, get him in a group. Like, do not let him be on his own.
No, I think that I think Johnny the Bull has more singles potential than Vito did.
I think Vito has the like Finley potential where it's like solid hand in like the under middle of the card.
Yeah, see, I didn't like Finley.
Johnny the Bull, I'm like, I feel like if we give you any chance, you're going to jump to the top turnbuckle and slip and then make an ass of yourself.
I disagree.
I think he ends up in a group, but I don't know for sure. Hmm. I don't know which company I'm thinking of. That said, with this match, we very quickly move on to the Cat actually finding Scott Hall's contract. And then we cut back to Johnny the Bull being carried out and Terry Funk comes to help him.
Yeah, so Terry Funk kind of takes Johnny under his wing and like becomes his mentor in that moment. If not like a reveal or something. But, yeah, it needs to be noted that Johnny is officially with Terry now, and they're probably going to team up against Vito.
Yeah, it's basically, yes, Johnny the Bull is now a face.
Yeah.
Elsewhere backstage, Lieutenant Loco is looking for the MIA, but is suddenly attacked by Rey Mysterio, and then the artist comes to join.
I'm sorry, who?
Oh, God, don't make me do the weird... Taff Cappy?
Taffa Taff Cappy. That's his name. Isn't it?
The artist formerly known as Prince Ikea. So there is the K in there.
Tafka Taff Cappy.
Yeah.
Tafka Taff Cappy. That's his name.
We're not doing that.
Tafka Taff Cappy.
I'm not doing that.
I'm messing it up every single time.
G.I. Bro makes the save. So G.I. Bro then holds a team meeting for the Misfits in action. Stop trying to work it out. I can see you looking up. He says it's time to get serious and points out like, all the main eventers are gone. Like, it's time for us to step up.
This is a really, like, good speech, though, because he goes to every person in the MIA and is like, do you have her back? Does she have your back? Do you have his back?
Like, going in order, like, you get him, you get him, you get him, you get her, you get him. Like, just all watch their back. You got this.
And there is no, like, underlying, you know, sexual joke about major guns. Like, it's all very, like, respectful across the board. Like, you guys are a team. Be a team. Not my problem anymore.
I was so ready for when they go, can you get Major Guns' back? I was like,
yeah, me too.
I was ready for, what the fuck is the...
Me too. And they didn't. I was very impressed.
I'm going to give Terry Taylor credit there because I feel like Ed Ferrara had a joke.
Yeah.
So G.I. Bro promotes huge erection to general and like kind of leaves the group here. It kind of seemed like he was going to...
We'll yeah, it definitely came off as like, you guys got this for yourselves. I have other shit to do.
Because Canyon starts making his entrance and like, they cut to Canyon for a second. And they cut back to the MIA who are watching this on the monitor like, there's our business. And Canyon comes out doing DDP's entrance in a wig and has positively Canyon.
He does it very well.
Yeah, you can tell how like good buds Kenny and DDP are here because like,
oh, yeah.
It just, he's just close enough while putting enough stank to where it's clearly him doing a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good impression.
They love me, they hate me, they'll never get tired of reading my book, Positively Canyon. And then you gotta read it two times.
It's funny, it's good.
Yeah, he was good
here. He was doing really well.
It's so dumb, but
I like
it. It's our kind of dumb. Canyon says he woke up this morning and gave himself a self high five.
Gross.
And he's feeling so positive he can't be beat and offers an open challenge. This is not for a match. It's just for a brawl, I guess. Because G.I. Bro answers the challenge. Bro hits his big moves on Canyon. You know, the Harlem Sidekick, Spinebuster, the whole jazz. Does a spin-a-rooney and then takes his pants off to reveal Booker T gear. And yeah, he's just back to being Booker.
Woo.
So that was short-lived.
Yeah.
So this is where I wanted to mention the fact that Terry Taylor, the former Red Rooster, is writing this.
Okay, yeah, why?
Because if someone knows the power of a gimmick being able to ruin your career in an instant, it's Terry Taylor. And I'm like, I think they got Booker out of that.
I don't think that G.I. Bro would have ruined his character.
I partially agree. I think he was doing the role fine. I think G.I. Bro was a go-nowhere gimmick.
I mean, yes,
that's fair. He hit his ceiling on that gimmick the second he had it.
I think that they just didn't think hard about where it could have gone. Like, they could have done stuff with it. I mean, an all-American military character, like, they've done that. That's not a dead end. Like, look at Kurt Angle. He ran all-American for his whole fucking career. I just don't think that they gave it enough thought outside of what it would be with the MIA. And I think if they had, it would have been fine.
They really needed to give him a warrior medal.
Yeah, so that he could, you know, lose it.
So Ken Kennedy could stab him in the forehead with it.
And really, like, gauge out people's, yeah, you know, blood. Yeah.
Dude, the TNA is going great, man.
Yeah, if you want to know what we're talking about, get over on the Patreon. There's a lot going on over there.
But yeah, Booker T's back. He'll have his old music next week, apparently.
I think that's what was bothering me. Because, like, I never stopped calling him Booker T.
Yeah.
I think that he is a wrestler that transcends a character. He's not his character. He's just himself. Wrestling. I don't know.
I think the exception to that, which you just haven't seen a ton of, is King Booker.
I didn't like King Booker. Well, okay, no, maybe I didn't like Charmel.
Or, oh God, TNA Booker T, I think it might be Main Event Mafia era, is when he's clearly just seen the last King of Scotland and is doing Forrest Whitaker, the King of the Jungle.
Oh God. Yeah, I think my annoyance with King Booker was Charmel in reality.
Sorry. Yes, you have seen
King Booker!
What show were we watching?
I don't know.
Yeah.
She says that like 7 times in a row.
Same inflection. More than 7. Backstage, David Flair finds Daphne, who slaps him.
Good for her.
Horace Hogan then hypes himself up for his match. And Emily, how does he do this?
Oh no, I forgot the words! But he's like making up a rap about taking on Goldberg.
When it was Horace Hogan, and I'm here to say.
God. Oh man, I want to go back and watch it, but it was like.
Goldberg in a hardcore way. Yeah.
It was just
a little song.
I don't think it started out intending to be a rap, but he said enough in a rhythm that it was like an intentional rhythm. It was too intentional. It was not an accident, is what I'm trying to say.
So yeah, it's time for Horace Hogan versus Goldberg. Horace Hogan comes out. I was very ready for the B-team music. We did not get it. I was happy.
What music did we get for Horace?
Generic rock, generic, number 4. Okay. In between the entrances, Steiner and Nash are seen backstage being like, oh, I mean, we should interfere, right? No, we can't.
Yeah. It's against the rules.
Goldberg then makes his entrance, and Scott Hudson has to really brush off the fact that people are very clearly cheering for Goldberg.
See, this is one of those matches that it really, like, toes the line on the heel face dynamic, because I think Horace was a heel for so long and Goldberg was a face for so long that changing that dynamic is impossible.
Okay. I'm going to mostly agree with you here. The Horace Hogan thing, the fact that he's out to like get revenge for his uncle, who he just kind of sided with 8 days ago.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
you've been feuding on and off since literally the podcast started.
Yes.
Dead brother, son, brother.
Exactly. So no one knows him as a face.
Yeah.
So no one knows to cheer him, really. And no one's really truly been given a reason to cheer him.
Yes.
Because he didn't do that much for Hogan when he got beat down. So yeah. why would we cheer him?
And then Goldberg. What's the main premise of the Goldberg turn?
Honestly, I don't know.
It's that in terms of heel heat, it's that he sided with Bischoff and Russo.
Sure.
Who's not fucking here tonight?
That's true. There's no power behind that.
You want to see Goldberg squash a dude he's beat 100 times?
That's what this felt like. This felt like the streak.
I think it's because Horace Hogan was part of the streak multiple times.
He was, yeah. It did. It felt like the streak. It felt like people were just excited to see big man squash small man.
Yeah.
But they were both, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Match starts. Horace actually gets some offense until a big clothesline. And Goldberg starts like hyping up the crowd. I'm like, bud, stop.
It's so hard to boo him.
But like there is the element. I'm kind of wondering if Goldberg was actually told like, do your normal thing, because we don't know if Russo's coming back. And if he's not, you're not fucking staying heel.
True.
That's stupid. Why did he even turn to heel?
It was good of, like, in a work sense. It was good of Scott Hudson to try to be like, oh, the crowd cheers him, but they don't know that he's, you know, a corporate shill.
No, it wasn't they don't know. It was...
They're gonna learn.
They'll remember. Okay. It was worse. I'm like, oh, God.
He tried. God bless him, he tried. And there were so many signs in the crowd that they kept cutting to. That's just
Scott Hudson's epitaph.
Yeah. They kept cutting to, like, Goldberg is my hero. Like,
one group has a Soldberg with a dollar sign. They cut to that 6 times.
That's, like, the only sign that indicates that Goldberg did something bad.
But yeah, they cut to Goldberg is my hero. And they're quickly like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, shit.
Oh, my God. They just did this on AEW, too. Jon Moxley came out. And did an interview with Tony Schiavone. He's like, this isn't your company anymore. And then leaves the crowd. People are thinking this is going to result in Shane McMahon debuting. But he leaves and they go to zoom in on this one guy who's like doing a shocked face. And he's wearing a CM Punk shirt. So they had to pan away.
Wait, do they really think that Shane McMahon is going to debut in AEW? Oh, I know there was that meeting, but...
Yeah.
Hmm.
We'll see.
I think I've seen this film before.
We'll see how bad the Netflix documentary goes over.
Oh, I cannot wait.
We're definitely going to watch it. I think we need to watch it before we figure out how much we have to say about it and what medium that needs to be in.
Fair. That's fair. I think it'll be spoken.
It's going to be Emily's commute to work going, let me tell you about Vince McMahon.
I mean, that's a genre of podcast.
Anyway, there's a match. Goldberg hits mounted punches to kind of be a heel, and then throws Horace to the outside and throws him around some more. Horace ducks a punch, and Goldberg punches the ring post. Horace then hits a few chair shots and then a big boot in the ring. Goldberg is immediately up and hits a spear, and they're like, he got up from the Hogan boot? Yeah, not that what? Hogan.
No, yeah, that this it's not, Hogan it's does not genetic. Have, this Hogan does not have that power or presence.
Goldberg then does the big signal for the jackhammer, like hyping up, I'm going to do it. And then,
yeah, you're telling me this man's a heel?
He hits it, gets the win, and I'm like, I don't think Goldberg is a good enough wrestler in 2000 to know how to work heel.
I mean, of course he's going to win. In what world?
Oh, no, he was always going to win. But just the style of wrestling, I think he only knows one style.
Maybe, yeah. It's just there was no world where Horace Hogan beats Goldberg.
Yeah, they
with
did,
no interference.
They did a terrible job making you believe. Like, you needed this to be Goldberg is out cutting a promo, and Horace, like, somehow, with a weapon and the element of surprise, like, lays him out. This was just cold. I'm going to challenge a guy who's beat me a bunch of times.
More like Goldberg.
Yeah, there was no reason to think Horace was ever going to win.
No.
Goldberg chokes Horace out post-match to be like, oh, yeah.
Don't forget, I'm a heel.
This was, you know, like, Goldberg... Fucking Goldberg brings energy to a show. You just have him be a face and we're going to be better off. I find it wild that he does not win the world title again.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Like, we still have until almost April that this company dies and they couldn't work him back in.
But I'm sure Jeff Jarrett gets like four more times after he inevitably loses it.
I don't know. Let's go backstage. Kevin Nash fucking mumbles something. This man is on, seems to be on the Scott Hall diet right now.
This kind of made me think that Scott Hall was present, because what we're trying to say is Kevin Nash was drunk.
Yeah.
Or came off drunk. I don't know if he actually was, but he was slurring. So to me, I was like, oh, Scott Hall's definitely here and they're throwing back some drinks backstage. And Kevin's like, oh, fuck, I gotta go work. But you said he's not here. No.
Yeah, he heads out for his match, and it's the Cat versus Kevin Nash for Scott Hall's contract.
What a dumb premise. I'm sorry. This is a dumb premise for a match.
The Cat comes out to the ring with the contract in a briefcase and does his usual The Cat thing of telling the crowd to shut up to get heel heat. Ugh. The Cat kind of can cut a promo. That's why I hate that he resorts to the cheap bullshit.
He kind of can, but like not really.
He's never given that much to work with.
He's never tried.
He basically just tells Nash to bring it and then dances and then handcuffs the briefcase to Mark Madden at ringside.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. Nash comes out and the Cat shows Nash the key around his neck and poses. Nash and the Cat fuck up the first move of this match.
Yes.
It's meant to be like a punch or a clothesline, and they don't manage to do either.
I think it was supposed to be a clothesline, but Kevin Nash very clearly misses.
Yeah.
This match had potential. I was really hopeful for it because Mark Madden had it handcuffed to his wrist. I was hoping that I would see Kevin Nash punch Mark Madden in the face. I was hoping.
You noted no red shoes. I'm like, what if the red shoes were in the briefcase? That would have been cool.
That would have been something.
So they go to the outside and the Cat calls for someone to interfere on the mic, but before he can actually say it, Kevin Nash cuts him off.
So he was intending to break his own rule.
Yeah, they go to the same spot at the commentary table, but again, Nash cuts him off. Cat low blows Nash, does a little dance, and then low blows him again. Cat hits kicks in the corner, but eats a running clothesline, and Nash signals for the jackknife powerbomb, hits it, and pins the Cat in about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Nash retrieves the key, but inside the briefcase is just 8x10s of the Cat.
I feel like we have these headshots somewhere.
Not at the Cat.
I would not be surprised.
Nash then gets back in the ring to rare kick his ass chance.
Kick his ass. We should use that more.
We then get Goldberg appearing on the screen, and he challenges Nash to a match, the Bash of the Beach, for Scott Hall's contract, which he has and proceeds to eat.
He ate the divorce papers. He ate them with ketchup.
My note here is just indulge Emily.
Do you want me to do a little monologue?
What do you got? No. You get to look it up. You got to do it from memory.
No, I had it already pulled up. It's long. It's too long.
Remember how you didn't want tangents? My note here was indulge Emily, but I'm not going to let you do a whole fucking monologue. Unless you do it as Goldberg.
If we never had a serious marriage, then we can't have a serious divorce.
Once you get the divorce, you have to ask, who's next?
Oh my God.
So yeah, we have a match for Bash the Beach.
I'm looking at I auditioned with this monologue a couple of times. I didn't know what 90% of this monologue meant when I said it in freshman year of high school.
I'll have to read it later.
Yeah. I didn't know what the word farce meant.
So I do need to point out something Emily has started doing in the build to Bash the Beach. We finished this segment and it's like, all right, cool. We've matched for Bash the Beach. Emily goes, I wonder if this has anything to do with the Dark Side of the Ring.
Just let me watch it and I won't ask every time.
Backstage, Mike Tenay is with Kevin Nash, who was just in the ring, Scott Steiner, and Medeja. Nash says Bash the Beach is on his birthday and he's the only guy to beat Hall, so fuck you, Bret Hart, I guess.
Get fucked.
Bret did it twice.
No, he didn't.
He beat him twice.
Who?
Sorry, Jeff Jarrett.
Who?
Nash says Hall lives 40 minutes away from the pay-per-view, and it's going to be a great birthday party after. Scott Steiner then is like, Jeff Jarrett's not the chosen one. Why am I not the chosen one? Look at me, genetic freak.
Jesus Christ.
Jeff Jarrett kissed my ass.
What the fuck? I think this is where the show starts to like kind of fall apart.
Yeah, speaking of what the fuck, the Filthy Animals come out, and what the fuck are these outfits?
I was not even focused on the outfits. Just what the fuck? The dynamic of this group has absolutely disintegrated.
Yeah. Who is now in the Filthy Animals? Just
Juventud
to catch us up.
Guerrera, Disco Inferno, Rey Mysterio, Conan. I feel like I'm missing a fifth. Tigress.
Yes. Hoobie's outfit wasn't the worst. Disco is wearing, like, it's not Tommy Hilfiger or polo, but, like, that kind of vibe, like, tank top tracksuit kind of look. Rey Mysterio is wearing leather overalls.
Yes.
And Conan is just wearing beige.
He's wearing a sweater with three different shades of brown.
And a weird little hat.
And a weird little hat.
And Hoobie hops on commentary to talk over multiple parts of this promo. Because Conan does his usual thing, including asking Tigress, feel that. That's enough.
You like this sweater? Feel it. That's enough.
And then it just kind of made us sad, but Disco and Rey, hootie hoo!
Why?
Hootie hoo!
Why?
Hootie hoo!
And all the while, Juventud is just trying to, like, get his little thing in.
No.
And he just keeps doing that. And that just, like, makes it worse, because he's not part of this.
Finally!
He was never part of this group.
The juice has come back!
Juventud Guerrero.
The juice has come back to... He says where he's fucking from. He can't come back to Billy. He's never been here.
No, because Juventud was never part of this group. He was never a filthy animal. So the fact that he is trying to be like, and I'm here too.
Look how Disco gets by with you. Hoobie, you're like, you were never.
No, the difference is Disco is like actively trying to acclimate and not take over.
Well, Disco's the one they're like, what the fuck is he doing here?
I don't know why. Because he's not trying to be something, like, he's not trying to be the leader of the group. He's not trying to, like, take over or, you know, insert himself. Juventud is trying to come into the Filthy Animals and be Billy Kidman or the leader of the animals, whatever. And he thinks that his gimmick is more important than everybody else's, even though he's never really been part of this and his gimmick never really went over.
So, Emily, I don't know when the fuck this happens. If it's soon or if it's, like, it can't be that far, but... I know at some point he becomes just Disco, but it's D-I-S-Q-U-O.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any sort of other gimmick with that. I just know that's a thing.
Disquo.
Yeah. But anyway, there's a match here. It is Rey Mysterio versus Lieutenant Loco versus The Artist for the Cruiserweight Champion. So we do get Rey Mysterio on Rey Mysterio Nitro.
Booyaka.
Sad booyaka noises.
This was just a weird match. It was cringy. I was uncomfortable. It was all bad. I just...
Yeah, because the artist throws Chavo in the ring for a Rey leg drop. Then the artist just, like, gets mad that, like, why'd you go for the pin? Like, it's a fucking three-way dance.
Because it's a match. I'm trying to win the match.
The artist hits a powerbomb on Rey, and Loco hits a frog splash. Loco is then sent to the floor, and Rey vaults the artist out, and then everyone just kind of comes back in without incident. I didn't even think about the fact that it's, like, no outside interference. Notably, there's no pops on this show.
What do you mean? Oh, pops like the character. I thought you meant, like, pops from the
audience. No, pops the character. I'm like, is he gone? I legitimately don't know when he disappears, so.
Well, because you did point out that he did get a name in the card.
Yes, his name, like, on the nameplate, he's there. But he's not with the group. And I'm like, I don't even know who plays him to check the Wikipedia.
No.
But, yeah, I didn't even think about, like, oh, yeah, no outside interference, because they just go out there. Your thing was, all right, there's three women, how long until a cat fight? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I'm after the match. Loco is crouched in the corner. Rey hits a Bronco Buster on the artist lower down that same corner. Rey goes after Chavo up top, but also gets crouched, and Chavo hits a Tornado DDT on the artist for the win.
This is a very quick match.
Yeah, a little too quick, especially with three people.
I don't know. I didn't like this premise at all. So this kind of, like, put me out of my misery. So I was actually thankful that it was short.
The women all catfight post-match for, like, a second?
This was not even a catfight. I wouldn't even qualify this as a catfight. This was just women acknowledging that there are other women.
Yeah. This whole match, like, didn't seem like they had a great plan going in. But, like, the fact that we know Rey is 70% and proceeds to have a litany of fucking knee injuries.
For the rest of his career.
Yes. However... He recently, in 2024, like, released, like, hey, here's, like, all the stem cell shit I've had, like, done to, like, my legs and knees. Rey Mysterio is, like, weirdly leading the, like, public opinion of, hey, stem cells are actually fucking great and not a weird thing. Yeah, he is still wrestling because of stem cells.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I am not a scientist. Look up Rey Mysterio stuff on your own time. But, yeah, it is an interesting read.
Huh, okay. I mean, it makes sense. There had to be a reason. Like, yeah. I'm not saying it makes sense because, like, I understand the science.
No, yeah, I guess there's that many knee surgeries wrestling at, like, the age of 50. Yeah, that's That's incredible.
Yeah, there had to be something there. I think that's great.
Well, speaking of, there's something there. David Flair begs for forgiveness with Daphne, and she just forgives him. And back from commercial, he puts Daphne in the car and is like, oh, I forgot something. I'll be right back.
But he, like, sends the car off. Like, yeah. He's like, oh, I'll meet you wherever.
Notably, we thought it was a botch, but the car moves 4 feet and stops.
Yeah, we're like, that's weird. Daphne was driving it?
Yes, Daphne was driving it. However, I don't think this was a botch. I think this was meant to be a thing.
I don't think it was either.
Because David Flair then goes to be with Miss Hancock and, like, kiss her. They weirdly, like, don't kiss or have chemistry for an actual couple.
Yeah, they're like a real life couple. Then they do not kiss.
And then we see Daphne out of the car looking in a monitor. And it's like, okay, I guess you did actually stop the car, get out to make sure. But David also
found a monitor?
David also went all about 20 feet.
Yeah, that was the logistic that I kind of lost. Like, yeah. Why don't you just run after him?
The short version is she sees them kissing and is heartbroken and notably is wearing a very high-cut t-shirt. I don't know if I kind of noticed that. I'm like, oh yeah, after your boobs popped out, they put you in no pops here. So I will remind you, we are working towards Daphne versus Miss Hancock at the pay-per-view.
Yay, can't wait. Can't wait for that 30-second match.
In a wedding gown match.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, maybe 60 seconds.
I think Crowbar might bump out of a pair of pants, so there's that.
Crowbar is in the wedding dress match?
He's going to interfere, I guess. Let's move on to a match.
Oh, maybe don't.
It's The Perfect Event versus Tank Abbott and Rick Steiner.
We were doing real well with this show.
We've now entered the Ed Ferrara part of the show. Commentary talks about how, like, Tank Abbott and Rick Steiner are about to break up. Like, everything is pointing towards it. They've, like, broken up, like, kind of twice already, but no.
They never had chemistry as a tag team. It never made sense for them to be a tag team. So, yeah, break up.
Tank and Rick slam Stasiak around, including a belly-to-belly, with a pin broken up by Palumbo. Palumbo then tags in, who runs into a power slam. And then we get Tank Abbott, like, chastising a fan at ringside and chasing him off. I did not get what his sign said. I thought it said something about three count.
I don't remember. I definitely took note of what it said.
It was so quick.
It was very quick. You're right. It did not have anything to do with the people who were actively in the ring.
I've mentioned before, Tank Abbott does join three counts. This might be the start of that. But notably, Rick Steiner is now left alone. The Perfect Event beat down Rick on the outside, and you can actually hear Charles Robinson count to eight, and then a real long count before he gets to nine. It's like, get back in the fucking ring. Rick tries to power up, and does for a moment, as Stasiak goes for the muscle flexor. Steiner hits a sloppy German suplex, and goes for a Steiner Bulldog on Palumbo, but Palumbo has slipped the muscle flexor, and hits Steiner in the ribs with it. The Perfect Event then hit a double flapjack for the win, and retain the titles. Like, wow, they haven't actually won a match. It's like, I mean, they did by count out and shit. Like, just because you don't count that. Like,
yeah.
Count out and DQ, but like, that is still winning a match.
Whatever. This match really lost my interest. This was, I could not have cared less about this. It's for
people. Tank Abbott was barely
about
in there.
That's true. But they've made me not care about Rick Steiner, too.
Well, the problem is, this is heel versus heel. So yeah, you're not meant to root for anybody.
But they also just haven't established these characters well enough for me to even care about them. I think there's something like to be said about a heel versus heel match if the characters that are in it are somebody to, like, worth watching.
Okay, fair. Yeah, I think that, I guess we can find the middle ground there of, yeah, when you do two cold heel teams facing each other.
Yeah,
who
cares?
The fuck are we supposed to root for?
Why would I watch? Why wouldn't I use this as my pee break?
Based on the 2-on-1 and the fact that Scott helped him the other week, it does seem like they're about to put Rick back face. Mm. I still don't totally get why WWE didn't pick him up.
Rick?
Yeah.
Maybe he just didn't want to.
Yeah, I don't know whose contracts fall under which company. That's always a weird thing.
Maybe he was already, like, gearing towards being done, and he just wanted to, like, go be a family man. Go raise his son.
Go buy a Shoney's. How do I mention the Shoney's before you do?
I love the Shoney's.
So, Emily, do you want me to run through the next segment, or would you like to take the reins?
I guess I will, because it's so unhinged.
This next segment kind of broke us.
Uh-huh. We had to take a break after this one. So, we're backstage, we're in the locker room with two characters who have wild hair. Both of them. We have our good friend, old Asia, you know, we've lost one woman in the company. We can fill that slot with another woman. So Asia is back on the roster.
Oh, so, related to women. Apparently Molly Holly was backstage at ECW, like, but they didn't do anything because she still signed at WCW.
Oh, damn. And Asia is there with her fiancé, good old Dale Torborg.
Yes, Dale Torborg.
Dale Torborg.
Dale Torborg.
Dale Torborg?
Dale Torborg.
Dale Torborg. You fucked it up. So they are talking about Dale fighting his inner demons, talking about how...
I want to note, they introduce this. They don't just talk about it. This is the first time this has been a concept.
Yes. This is bonkers.
I also, for continuity's sake, need to note that Dale Torborg is not the first wrestler to play the demon.
So we cut back. We are with Asia and Dale having a fairly intimate conversation about Dale's, you know, inner demons, if you will. Saying that, you know, he's been gone for a few months, but all of a sudden this guy is back and they don't know what to do. He doesn't know how to handle it. Essentially, it all ends with Asia having to take the suit of the demon away from him because he can't be tempted to go into that mindset again. What he's trying to say is the demon is an alter ego of Dale Torborg's that takes him over. It's like a Venom situation. It's like a Batman meets Venom sort of situation. Somewhere between
of, you know, I can't live a normal life as long as I'm Batman, aka the demon.
Like, the demon is causing rifts in their relationship.
It's like an alternate personality thing. I went to therapy. I thought I was rid of him.
Yeah. He's literally talking about how he went to therapy.
It's the Black Rain of his time.
It's like, he's not the demon. He is his own inner demons. Like, this is so meta.
He's his own worst enemy.
Can we forget about the things I said when I was the demon?
Didn't mean to call you China.
God. But, like, this was just such revisionist history almost. Or just, like, it was like every line was bonkers.
Now, was Norman Smiley also possessed when he dressed as the demon?
See, that we'll never have an answer to. We will never know.
Is it a Twin Peaks Bob situation?
I never saw Twin Peaks, so I don't know what you're referencing. But that, yeah, the whole, like, did Kiss know that they were working with a man who had a mental illness? Like,
Kiss is long gone.
What? But I'm thinking about the lore of the demon. Like, are we going back to the beginning, or are we just, like, never mind?
Listen, you either die a Dale Torborg or live long enough to see yourself become the demon.
Oh, Dale Torborg. And just, like, his name alone is a burial. Like, I'm sorry. I know this is your real life name.
It's really the last name, Torborg.
And they hit it so hard.
They, like, hit it almost as hard as, like, Draco hitting Potter.
Potter. Torborg.
Call Torborg a muggle. It's like, it's going to be so satisfying to a racist. These fucking Torborgs around town.
Oh my god. Yeah, so that's this segment.
Oh yeah, and Vampiro's watching. Now, granted, we're about to get more spooky bullshit, because Vampiro comes out to the ring with a mic. Goody.
It also begs the question of, like, who was the Hauer Power talking about last week? Like, was Dale part of the Hauer Power, or was it just Vampiro? Was this all a thing? Because in Vampiro's next promo, he's talking about, like, how he saw the demon. He was like, I like this kid. We have a lot in common. Like, I don't understand what his whole goal was.
Yeah, but Vampiro's like, we're going to have a going away party. So he calls out Dale Torborg and Asia. And then Vampiro just kind of buries Dale Torborg.
Yeah, he does.
And asks, like, isn't it terrible when something important to you just, like, goes away?
So, no, how he led into this was Vampiros tells Dale, like, I can't believe you want this part of you to be to disappear. Like, the demon is a part of you. And I know how it feels for a part of you to, like, take over your life, but that's who you are. And wouldn't it be really hard for an important part of yourself to be taken away? Lights cut. Let's come back. Asia's gone. Confusion. Lights cut again. Lights come back. Vampiro's gone. What the fuck?
However, a crew member is suddenly, like, crouched right next to the ring.
And it's all, like, of the audience are pointing at this guy like, oh my god, he's over here.
And then we get a pre-tape video on the Jumbotron of Vampiro driving a hearse away. He does mumble something, but it was It was maybe a little more coherent than Kevin Nash, but not by much.
Unsure if Asia was in the hearse.
Yes.
Unsure.
But levels, mumbling levels of more like Ghostberg. More like Ghost Demon.
I don't know if I loved this or I hated this.
This was like, fucking
the
terrible.
The combination of the two segments, terrible. The therapy segment and the vampire segment, I don't know if I fucking loved it or not.
This does ride the line of so bad it's good, but yes, this is fucking terrible.
I kind
of
loved it. I mean, the revisionist history of it all is bananas, but like,
again,
I kind of loved it. This, it's very faffy.
This story is begging for a... Sullivan, my son!
Yes, I agree.
I imagine these two will have a match Bash at the Beach, so we'll see.
Why? I don't want it.
Next up, it's the 2.5 man threat versus Buff Bagwell and Chronic. I say 2.5 man threat because the triple threat is Shane Douglas, Bam Bam Bigelow, and a very visibly injured Chris Candido. And a very visibly unmotivated, injured Chris Candido.
But he's there. And he's working. He's there.
Shane Douglas does his try hard promo. And then challenges Buff to any kind of match at Bash the Beach. The faces come out. Everyone debates who will star. But they decide on Bam Bam Bigelow and
Brian Clark. Did you see what shirt he was wearing?
I did not.
A Nitro Grill shirt. You can always rely on Bam Bam Bigelow to be wearing the most random Nitro merch as his ring gear.
This starts to franchise sucks chance, so notably, Shane Douglas comes in. They're like, all right, well, they want to see me get beat up. Here we go.
Good for him. Get beat up, French fry.
Clark overpowers the franchise, but Douglas hits a dropkick and then does a flare turnbuckle spot. It's like, do you hate this man or do you want to fuck this man? It's very unclear.
Oh, no.
We get a Uranagi from Clark, and then he tags in Adams. Adams hits a full Nelson slam on Douglas and then tags in Buff. Douglas runs away, tags in Bigelow. Bigelow overpowers Buff and tags in Shane once Buff is down. Douglas works Buff over in the corner, and then a trio of suplexes, including a big final delayed one. Adams then distracts Douglas, like, very much like a heel. This was weird vibe. Mm. Especially when the heel has a partner with a broken arm.
Yeah.
So Buff hits a double arm DDT, which commentary gets into its own pants about. About like, like the Fuji Konami DDT. We call it a Buff DDT. I'm like,
okay.
Just a fucking double arm DDT. Calm down.
Stop. You're not the wrestling masterminds that you think you are.
I'm really wondering, did I say a wrestling name or a video game name? I don't know.
I will never know.
Brian Adams tags in. So Brian Clark just fucking comes in. Again, like a fucking heel.
Yeah.
The faces hit 3-on-1 offense on Bam Bam Bigelow, including a high time. Candido then comes in, hits Clark with a foreign object that Clark just no-sells, and Candido bails. Buff goes for a blockbuster, it's countered, and then immediately goes for a blockbuster to like the, so the hard cam hits it better. I don't know if that was an audible or what.
I don't know.
But he does a fucking dance and then pins Bam Bam Bigelow.
Sure.
Douglas attacks Buff post-match with a Pittsburgh plunge. And despite Chronic just leaving to chase Candido, their music then hits for them to make the 45-foot save.
Sure.
And, yeah, that's the match. And that's all for Chris Candido.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a way to leave.
Yeah,
He was here for, like, a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Sunny leaving probably did not help his standing in the company and the way she left. And him being hurt, they're like, well, we got nothing for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if he goes back to ECW or not.
Damn. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, he has a little something, but a lot of his career was dragged down by being tied to the anchor that is Tammy Lynch.
Yeah.
But I think they could have gotten more out of him in the Cruiserweight division. It's kind of sad that they half non-promoted him to the New Blood and went, oh, well, now you're just fodder.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't give him an opportunity to be anything other than the, like, they made a decision on what his character was going to be, and they refused to allow him to go anywhere outside of it.
Yeah, Kevin Nash needed a punching bag, so here you are. This match was
No.
Again, weird psychology in this of the faces constantly cheating and 3-on-1 offense. And, like, you're not the underdogs when you're facing a guy in a fucking sling.
No.
That said, not the most excited for Buff Bagwell versus the French Fries.
Nope. Although there was a really sweet tweet from DDP about him today. Maybe yesterday. Recently. Buff Bagwell was recently sober. And he owes out a lot to DDP. And so he tweeted about it and like thanked DDP for it. And DDP retweeted it and like saved his little message as well. It was actually very nice.
Oh, good. I'm glad that's actual things Buff Bagwell is doing and not hiring a pedophile to tweet left-wing comments for him.
Correct. Now, this is good, getting on his feet, doing good things. We're going to applaud the good.
I guess speaking of DDP's tweets, we did not mention at the start of the show, this is the first episode that we were recording after the passing of a Mr. Sid Vicious.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, man. That's a hard one. Yeah. He lived such a private life towards the end that it definitely falls under my category of like, look, someone who lived a very private life died. Like, it is frankly not your business kind of thing.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
And even in the DDP tweet, he didn't realize, but Sid had been like battling cancer for years and DDP didn't know.
Yeah, there was an unfortunate reaction to this in that it's like, okay, his son claims that he's died because there's some weird people that were fucking obsessed with Sid and made fake Twitter accounts claiming to be Sid and his family and a weird thing. And it was like, people weren't actually sure if he had passed away or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was a weird vibe of look, I love No Context Sid. I retweeted him. You know, I just love just randomly see him yelling and whispering. But like, internet people, sort yourselves out sometimes.
Yes. I agree.
But
it's a loss to the community, though. I mean, he was incredible. Like, he's not my cup of tea. I know you love him. He's not my favorite guy, but I can recognize talent when I see it. And I recognize that he was a big deal.
Yeah.
He was one of five people to main event both Starrcade and WrestleMania.
Yes, he went through this list. Cool. It's like, yeah, Steve Austin doesn't count.
But this one, actually, this is legitimate. This does count.
I think the best way to describe Sid Vicious is they say lightning doesn't strike twice. But lightning struck about fucking 12 times for this guy.
Mm.
It was, he'd show up, he'd be a badass, and then he'd leave to go play softball. And what more could you want in life? So,
yeah.
Rest in peace to the master and the ruler of the world. Or the universe, depending on which company.
That's fair. And we are now 2 for 2 on wrestlers that have passed away on or near our wedding.
3 for 3, babe. Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt.
Terry Funk was earlier.
It was like the rehearsal day, wasn't it?
No, I thought Bray Wyatt was rehearsal. Maybe Terry Funk was right the week after. Prior. Yeah, we're doing really well.
So, Emily, out of respect, you now have to watch Sin unedited.
His memory. I don't think that his memory would want me to watch that, actually.
Did you see the thing going on Twitter of the first person he powerbombed post-injury?
No.
It was a random indie show. I forget what the character's name was at the time, but it's Sami Zayn.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I will not be watching that match. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you put on the Twitter or whatever. I am not watching that.
Well, you have to watch the match. It's edited.
I'm not watching that moment. You will not be getting my live reaction. I am not doing that.
Speaking of Sid, in case anyone's ever been curious, I do loosely plan on us reviewing the WWA, but we'll see. That said, it's time for our Nitro main event. It is Jeff Jarrett versus Scott Steiner for the WWE title with Mike Awesome as the special guest referee. Ugh. The cat comes out with Awesome to join commentary, and then Steiner grabs a mic when he comes out to tell the cat that he sucks.
Got him.
And then, if I was running the show, I'd do a panties on a pole match and a freak on a leash. And this promo is just to set up Jeff Jarrett attacking him from behind. This, which lasts about 12 seconds before Steiner hits a tilt-a-whirl slam and elbow drops with push-ups. Steiner catches Jeff Jarrett and slams him back first into the corners and then sends Jarrett to the floor. Jarrett hits his one offensive move lately, which is the chair shot to the ribs and throat. Then threatens Medasia, who jumps his back, and Steiner hits a chair shot on Jarrett as Jarrett's like threatening to kill her.
Jesus.
Commentary at this point very much fails to dance around of why this is not outside interference.
Yeah, and because shut up, that's why. Because
she's already ringside?
Because hush, stop. Because don't think about it.
The two brawl into the crowd for a second, come back to ringside. Steiner slowly catapults Jarrett into the corner, hits a press slam. Commentary notes that Scott is setting up for the Steiner recliner and get very quiet when like someone starts to say, isn't that banned?
Yeah,
and,
shh.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm sure that won't come up at any point in this match.
Like, why?
Jarrett low blows Steiner and gets his foot up in the corner on a charge. Jarrett hits two diving axe handles and taunts the crowd. Steiner catches a third diving axe handle, but Jarrett rakes the eyes and hits a back suplex and actually goes, I just suplexed Scott Steiner.
Yeah, he like looks at the camera and says that. Like, why? That was a weird moment. I've never seen a wrestler actually do that.
I think it's just because Steiner's meant to be like the master of the suplex.
I guess.
Glargay sleeper from Jarrett, and Steiner slips out, hits a big vertical suplex. Steiner hits a power slam and then a spinning belly to belly. Jeff Jarrett kicks out of what has been a bunch of very fair counts from Mike Awesome. Mm. He's really doing a good job not being in the way, not drawing attention to himself, fair counts.
Yeah, he's actually calling it down the middle. Like, yeah. A lot of people say that about guest referees, like, oh, he's going to call it down the middle, but he's very much going to favor one guy. No, Mike Awesome makes you believe that he's actually going to be a fair ref.
Steiner then counters his stroke and then locks in a Steiner recliner. The cat gets on the mic immediately, knows this is illegal, and gives Mike Awesome a chair shot to break the hold. The chair shot only gets a two, so Awesome joins Jarrett in the beatdown. Steiner then T-bones Mike Awesome, locks in a Steiner recliner on Awesome. Jeff Jarrett grabs a guitar, hits a guitar shot on Steiner, and gets the win. Post-match, the cat mocks Steiner and dances for too long, so Steiner hits a belly-to-belly and then locks in a Steiner recliner on the cat. Jarrett and Awesome come back, and Steiner fights them off until he hits a Goldberg spear, which brings out Kevin Nash, and then Goldberg slowly leaves the ring when Kevin Nash can just grab him, and like it's too slow.
I lost interest in this match so quickly.
And that, Kevin Nash makes no attempt to follow.
No.
This just weird flat ending to the show.
So flat. So boring. Even Kevin Nash probably was like, I don't want to fucking do this.
Yeah, the match itself was okay, but just uninspired.
Uninspired, uninteresting, did not hold any kind of attention. I could not care less, unfortunately.
Despite how little Jeff Jarrett means, I didn't believe he was going to lose here.
Well, no, because they keep setting up the fucking match at Bash at the Beach, so no, of course he's not going to lose.
Yeah, and you keep giving like him, okay, here's six caveats of why you're not going to lose.
Right.
That like you don't deserve, but you're not going to lose.
Right.
But that's all for this show. Emily, thoughts on this Nitro as a whole?
I enjoyed this as a whole. Like, yeah. This was a good show. This was a, like, breath of, okay, we have, like, a reason to be alive. So, I mean, there were some low points. I mean, not every match was a banger, but, like, the Young Dragons and Three Count, that match, like, brought me back to life.
Yeah.
Makes me want to keep recording this podcast.
It, like, makes you remember that, like, there are talented guys in this roster that if you give them time, they can have a match.
Yeah.
It is unintentionally hilarious that is the first match once Russo's gone.
Yeah.
Like that just screams a message. Volumes. I don't think that's an accident. But yeah, the second half of this definitely falls off a little bit.
Oh my God, it drags so hard. The second the Tank Abbott comes out is when I'm like, oh, the show's over.
We still have two more weeks of Nitro before Bash at the Beach that don't have Russo, so...
We'll see.
We'll kind of see the direction they're going to take, and I'm kind of curious how much they're going to continue that once Russo's back at the pay-per-view and after. It's a weird vibe of...
We're kind of in a no man's land
right now. Yeah, it's kind of like going to be... I'm worried it's going to be half-baked Nitros, but right now that raw cookie dough tastes great. But it's time for best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, I have a feeling these might line up a bit, but...
I think our best bit is definitely the same.
Yes, it is the Young Dragons versus Three Count. Are you including the Landstorm bit with that or no?
Yeah, I
would as well.
Yeah.
Now, Emily, what is your worst bit?
I'm giving it to the Filthy Animals versus MIA. It was just uncomfortable. It just made me upset.
The artist is also in that match.
I guess, yeah. So him too, sure. So
you're giving it to Lieutenant Loco versus Ray versus the artist.
But like a lot of focus on the Filthy Animals in that. Like MIA was not as offensive. Taff Cappy, I forgot about. But it's really the Filthy Animals. Their inclusion in the segment just really made me sad and uncomfortable, and I just didn't like it. What about you? What's your worst bit?
I gave it to the demon, Dale Torborg.
See, I couldn't find a spot for him because I couldn't decide if I loved it or I hated it.
I'm giving it to all of it.
That is not the worst. I love him. I'm Team Dale.
The moment that they like turned him into a split personality, I had to pause to catch my breath of Jesus Christ.
Yep, that's valid. So the MVP, I don't have an answer for, quite honestly.
I'm torn between two.
Give me your thoughts.
I think it's either Booker or it's Three Count.
I might give it to Three Count because Three Count gave, you know, a breath of fresh air, sincerely, and like a reason to continue to watch.
Yeah, I think Three Count delivered. Booker gave us a tracking number. He's going to deliver, okay. But we don't have the package yet.
Okay, I can respect that.
So yeah, I think both of us are going to go three count for that.
Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, dilly gaff. And with that, that brings us to the end of the June 19th, 2000 WWE Monday Nitro. Next up, let's do some math, it's the June 26th Nitro.
Whatever the next Monday is.
There's no Vince Russo, that's what I know.
That's true. That is true.
But if you're missing Vince Russo, this is our review of all of his previous Nitros on all podcast platforms besides SoundCloud, as well as the rest of our back catalog. You can also follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod, everywhere besides Facebook, where it's the Butts in the Seats podcast. And then over on our Patreon, $5 a month at patreon.com/buttsintheseats gets you 19 bonus episodes, bunch of TNA, Legends House, upcoming Jesse Ventura story.
Yeah, so we have a pretty good trajectory of what's coming next over there. It's a lot of insanity, I think.
Yeah, that'll be next week or the week after.
And however we end up reviewing the Vince McMahon documentary from Netflix will also be on the Patreon. Whether that be a written review or a podcast review, it will all be over on the Patreon.
We got a little while before that.
Yeah. Not as long as you think. It's mid-September, and I want to do it fairly quickly.
But Emily, any final thoughts before we keep chugging towards Bash the Beach?
I just want to get there, man. I just want to get there.
It's really nice not having Hulk Hogan here.
It is nice to actually take a break from him. He's everywhere for us right now, and it's nice to not have to talk about him.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll get plenty of talk of him at Bash the Beach.
I know, and I want to fucking watch it.
But until the next Nitro, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I know, change it up.